Okay, welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller, joined by...
Ed Keim.
And Dan's not here this week.
Nope.
Dan is in Amsterdam, so he's there for Dev Days Amsterdam.
Yes.
So I'm wearing my Amsterdam shirt. We've got kind of a red light theme going here, and you came high, so...
I'm high on code.
Yes,
Channel exactly. 9 is really doing it for me these days.
So speaking of Channel 9, let's jump right in. You know, Dan and I wrapped last week's episode, and we went back across the street to our offices, and Jeff Sandquist came to us and said, hey, did you talk about the new beta of Channel 9, the version 4? And we didn't have an answer for him.
Yeah, and so you don't want Jeff being mad.
We
He is the Channel 9 man right now.
He holds the strings. So without further ado, if you haven't noticed it, you can go check out the beta of the Channel 9 site. This is version 4. They're basically moving a lot of the code base from the On10 and the Channel 8 site. A lot of those improvements are now getting retrofitted onto Channel 9 and a whole bunch of other improvements as well. I know a lot of people have asked for RSS feeds with attachments. I know that's a hot thing that they've added, kind of a different format for the way that the news scrolls. So it's a really good site. Go to beta.channel9.msdn.com.
It's really amazing how Channel 9 has evolved. If you go back and you look at the first sites from, I'm going to say 2003 or so, around that time frame,
yeah.
And you see where it's gone. I mean, it started off, it was pretty advanced at the time for what it did. I mean, the way the community stuff was brought together. And
yep.
These days, when you look at the amount of content that's up there, you obviously have to improve the way you handle managing all the content.
Of course,
and
yeah.
When you look at these RSS feeds, they're not a luxury now. This is a necessity. People
yep.
live that way.
They expect that.
And all that stuff yeah. there. And just...
iPod versions, you know, people kind of expect that.
Yeah, it's a really great experience, and it's going to be cool when that stuff
yep.
gets rolled in and gets available to as the default experience.
And they're listening to your feedback, too, so it's a good chance to
yeah.
interject there. Also this week, it seems every week we've got something other gaming-related to talk about.
Yeah.
Not just because we're gamers, but because there's some cool game-related development stuff to talk about. So we mentioned this in the past with the ability for you to take an X and A game you produce, publish that to the Xbox Live Marketplace, have other people go through and peer review that game, and mm. then have that game be available to, you know, everyone that's on Xbox Live, right?
Yeah.
And that was an announcement a few months ago, and now that is a reality, so you can check out the beta and do just that.
And there's also a lot of great materials to get started, too. There's the, mm-hmm. the quick start guide, and there's some more content, and there's a catalog, and,
yep.
and all this stuff that... to help you ramp up. So it's not just about, here, you know, there's command line SDK, run
right.
with it. Like, there's actually a really good experience
yeah.
around it.
Integrates with Visual Studio 2008.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. And also, I noticed an RPG starter kit.
Yes.
So, we might have to
might
have
be based.
Fun
we have to
that.
Find out. Maybe there's some of my code in there from the old days.
Oh, yeah.
Back, actually, I did an RPG for, we used to have these app building competitions for the Compaq framework, and obviously different groups have their own, but back when we were building for Silverlight, for smartphone, we were putting this CF on there originally.
Mm-hmm.
I did an RPG game. And
what was that called?
It was called Dimensions,
actually. Oh,
that's
it
was
right.
on Codeplex.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a Final Fantasy clone.
And, it was pretty sweet.
I remember I won, and they were amazed because yep. I was in product management, so I was technically in the marketing
side
of the house.
Guy, yeah.
And they were like, cool. And it was me and like three other people won for the apps they built.
Yep.
And they were, of course, paid to develop. I was just neglecting my job to
exactly.
develop. It was
drinking a lot of Diet Coke.
yeah, yeah. But I remember I never got the phone.
Oh,
because
really?
They were like, yeah, they're like, hey, we need to borrow your new phone, because those were the prizes, whereas
right.
you want a smartphone. And they said, yeah, we need these for just extra phones to dev on. We were getting so close to launch, and they said, you know, we've been going through. And we probably would have saved some phones if we had cut the self-destruct API a little earlier that seemed to destroy all the phones in the test lab. But I never got that one. So I'm going to go over there. I bet the price on that thing is...
With interest and everything?
Yeah,
man, you
I know. You got to think, what would I do with those 8 megs of RAM in the phone now? And it was probably only like a pound and a half.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty heavy phone and pretty cool stuff, but we should find
you
out.
You should dig up the source code and point it over to XNA.
I got
to
find, who's responsible for that team back then? They owe me a phone. I'm coming.
So what else do we have? You want to talk about
Silverlight 2, yeah.
yeah.
There's a whole slew of screencasts that are now available for Silverlight 2, the Beta 1 in particular. And this is really good because a lot of people out there might not take the chance to install the tools and to see how the code works, but they can go through, they can mm-hmm. watch some of these screencasts. There's actually 50 of them. And as you can imagine, with any API set,
yeah.
you know, 50 screencasts covers a huge amount of ground. And
yep.
The nice thing about this is... it's pretty convenient to get to. I mean, you can get the stuff that there's a Silverlight viewer for it, so you have the directly hosted on the pages. And I think, you know, videos can be underrated. They're useful in many regards, obviously from a marketing side, but for people who might not, like I said, be able to install the tools or not have the inclination to start writing until they see, wow, look at the value you get and how easy it is to get moving. Yep. So I'd really recommend checking that out.
That's Mike Talty and Mike Ormond over in Microsoft UK. Now, this next one, this is kind of interesting. You know, we've talked on Channel 9 in the past about different pointing devices. There's the multi-point.
There just hasn't been innovation. I think was the point we were getting at.
Yeah, it's been a while since anything truly innovative has come
up. I think the
up.
Nintendo Light Gun was the last time I was really impressed with
love
the way
that
to
thing.
Point. I mean,
and
there's
the
Wii remote's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But speaking
how do you
of
take
Wii,
that to the next level?
Absolutely. So this is a story that we just couldn't pass up. I was running across David Weller's blog actually while I was researching the X and A piece, and this is called a place to pee. So these are two guys in Belgium that had this idea that, hey, wouldn't it be cool if while I'm standing at a urinal, I can also play video games or vote for who I think the next candidate should be or whatever, right? And so they came up with this place to pee, which it's kind of not directly related to us, but it does introduce some interesting development topics. That how would you go about building something like this, right?
Yeah, I think, and also there's a lot of problems that I think you would come across in terms of just things you have to overcome when building a urine-driven user interface. These games, I believe, there's also isn't there some networking support? Like, do they? I mean,
you're not getting
forgot
at P2P. Are you?
That would be perfect. Yep. It's actually designed for
or
this.
Or the streaming video you watch.
The
while
streaming
you're
video.
I think that's enough on that topic. But I can't wait for Coding for Fun to come out with a library to help more people build this type of application.
Maker Faire next year is going to be disgusting.
If I could do my email while I'm just multitasking. That's what I'm talking about. So anyway, moving right along onto something as equally as exciting, Dynamics AX 2009 preview.
But exciting in a different way. I think that the people that might have been excited by the last clip may not get as much out of this one. But a lot of people aren't super familiar with Dynamics. I mean, there's obviously been name changes over the years, and Dynamics represents Microsoft's really the business software outside the office world. And it is not even outside. I mean, there's definitely a lot of correlation, a lot of cohesiveness that's going on to bring these parts of the world together. But we've been kind of dinged in the past on the show for not doing enough to talk about mid to upper mid-market ERP software.
Exactly.
And if you read the comment threads, you know that there's just a tremendous amount of demand out there for this show to show more respect to
Jones 1542, this one's for you.
Yes. Now, so, stop calling my house.
But in all seriousness, Dan did a video interview. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour long. Sits down with the Dynamics team, and they take you through how can you go about customizing and some pretty interesting stuff. I mean, a lot of the solutions built on SharePoint, so you can make a lot of customizations to SharePoint, the way you extend your user interface. And so now it's pretty cool if you're a SharePoint designer and if you're familiar with ASP.NET and the ways of extending SharePoint and whatnot, now you can be a CRM consultant.
Yep. So. And a lot of people were worried out there, whether you're developers or if you're ISVs that are reselling solutions based on this, what would happen to the various small and medium business product lines that Microsoft acquired over the years with Great Plains and Navision and sort of internal development. And here the Dynamics AX is for the Xapta line. And it's important to see like there is still investment going on across all these different line. So it's not like the rip and replace solutions you might expect where some companies acquire one and then expect all the users to migrate over. So there isn't kind of an underlying story here that's not as much out, but I think it's important to note that if people are making investments in these things, there's continued investment from Microsoft as well.
Right. So good stuff there. All right. So that brings us to a special segment of this week's episode. This idea actually came from some of the folks on the Channel 9 thread discussing, wouldn't it be great if we could have some teleconferencing capabilities during an episode?
Yep.
So let's go ahead and take a time out here, and we'll get set up for Desert Island Tools.
Yep.
All right. Now for a very special segment of this week on Channel 9. We're calling this Desert Island Tools, and so we're joined now by Scott Hanselman, who of course needs no introduction, and Clint Ruckus, who no one knows who he is. So Clint, you're an academic developer evangelist out in the field, and just built the Segway skateboard and all sorts of really cool stuff. Oh, actually, people do know you, the dance floor, what do you call that?
Computer-controlled disco dance floor.
Thank you.
Last year, I built an automated bartender.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So the thing we wanted to talk about today is called Desert Island Tools. And so the idea is that, you know, you're shipped off to this desert island and you want to take five tools, utilities, plugins, what have you. Let's assume that you already have, you know, all the basics. You've got Visual Studio, you've got Vista installed, but, you know, you need to continue your job as a software developer. What are the five tools that are most important to you? And we'll link back to your blog entries. I know Clint and Scott, you guys have both talked about this in your blog, but just for purposes of discussion today, let's limit you to those top five. So,
and also, in order to minimize the flame wars that are sure to ensue.
Yep.
You can assume the internet connection, you can assume power, you can assume multiple monitors. Let's just say that anything you would need as prerequisites to use these tools, as well as the motivation to use the tools, is going to be there.
So we're gonna are you actually trying to make this scenario realistic?
We're going to have to consult with LCA. Yeah.
We're trying to reduce
what
the load.
What are your five favorite tools? Come on.
We're trying to reduce the load on the Channel 9 servers.
A diesel generator?
Yes, okay, you've got
a
power.
Actually, it's wind power.
You've got one of those bicycles that Gilligan had to power the radio. So, so Ed.
Is there a Whole Foods market there?
Yes, there is a Whole
Foods. Yeah, it's a deserted island. I mean, it's not like you're at the bottom of the ocean.
So, Ed, what are your favorite tools?
All right, so I'm going to start off with probably my favorite non-Visual Studio direct tool, which is ScriptSharp. Obviously great if you're going to do any kind of heavy scripting development within the browser.
Okay.
I like Firebug a lot because when I'm working within Firefox, you know, you really have to support multiple browsers. It's a great tool for not only exploring the DOM, but also dealing with seeing what files are being downloaded from where and how long they take.
Okay.
Sandcastle, critical. That's for...
You're on a desert island. You have to have a sandcastle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The instructions, at least. But that's a great tool, kind of like is the replacement for NDoc, if you will, for...
Stop typing. Yep.
Great replacement, so you can build the docs. If you're doing anything platform-wise, you need to document your APIs. It uses the XML comments and stuff. Reflector, which I think lots of people use, just if you want to see what's going on inside those class libraries and other assemblies you're working with to see how the code really comes together. And the IE7 developer toolbar, just because in IE7 there are some things that that toolbar is really useful for.
Cool, cool. Good set of tools. All right, Scott's holding up his Zune. So, Scott, you'd take your Zune. What else would you take to this desert island? Your iPhone. Got it. Oh, that's an iPod. My bad. It's hard to see from here. So, in addition to that, oh, gosh, you guys are killing us here. Our sponsors are about to take us off the air. So, Scott, what would you take to this desert island?
I'm going to have to shut Clint up because he's out of control, man. This automated bartender, I think, has taken him... to the next level. My five favorite tools are Zoomit.
Of course.
Zoomit. This is the one that Rasanovich wrote. This is for presenting. I give a lot of presentations, and being able to zoom in and show someone what's going on the screen is really important.
Especially on a desert island.
I really hate it when someone is presenting and they say something like, well, you probably can't see that. So definitely Zoomit is my number one. I don't know who on the desert island is going to be presenting.
You'll have a Wilson.
Definitely Zoomit is.
We'll make sure you have
a
Wilson.
Crucial. Another one is Feed Demon, Nick Bradbury's Feed Demon, now owned by NewsGator. It's just bar none the best Windows fat client RSS aggregator. So if you're going to be reading your, I got to read my feeds, right? Got to get my New York Times while I'm on this desert island. Then Feed Demon is definitely required. Delicious. That would be del.icio.us. This is the social bookmarking tool. Got to have Delicious. I keep all of my idea or thought or anything that's going on that involves a URL, I stick it up on Delicious. So I keep track of everything up there. It's my brain in the cloud. Speaking of brains in the cloud, my fourth tool would be Live Mesh. Playing with this. I used to use Folder Share, and now I'm using Live Mesh because I can also use it to remote into my home machine. So if I'm on this desert island, clearly I need RDP access to my home machine. Maybe I could send an SOS by already peeing into the machine and typing in SOS in Notepad, and then someone's going to come and rescue me. And then my fifth tool is one called Darkroom. And Darkroom is a text editor that shuts out all of your windows and just puts you in an empty dark space with no title bar, with just your text and a black area. It's written in .NET, and it is a really great place if you want to write without being distracted. Now, of course, I'm on a dead island, but I don't think I'm going to have the issue of being distracted, but I suppose I'll probably at least close Outlook so I can be more productive on this theoretical desert island. So Zoomit, Feedbeamin, Delicious, Darkroom, and Live Mesh.
Awesome. Sounds good. And Clint, take it away.
Okay, so mine are ReSharper, which is a plugin for Visual Studio, Ultramon, which allows you to do multiple monitors. I'll talk about that more in a second. Firebug, which is a plugin for Firefox. Synergy, which allows you to, it's kind of like a poor man's KVM, and Windows Live Writer with two plugins, Flickr for Writer and Insert Code plugin. So what ReSharper, now going back to the top of my list, ReSharper is a plugin for Visual Studio, does smart code analysis, and it does, it pre-compiles your code while you're coding, so you know instantly when you have code errors. So for me, it helps me code faster and it also helps me code cleaner. Ultramon is a tool that, if you have multiple monitors, it extends out your toolbar to the second or third, however many monitors you have, and tells you which items are in that monitor. It also has a keystroke that I like to send your items to a new monitor. So I mapped it to Alt-Tilde, which is right above Alt-Tab. So I just constantly move stuff around when needed. Firebug, which is quite possibly, to me, one of the best plugins out there. If you're a developer, you should use it. It does JavaScript debugging. It has an awesome DOM inspector. It's very much like the Internet Explorer developer toolbar, but I honestly do believe that the Firebug is superior. Synergy. What Synergy is, it's a free plugin. It's multi-cross-platform. So if you have multiple computers, you can have one keyboard hooked up, and Synergy will have a client server mentality where you can move your keyboard and mouse settings over. I'm sorry, you can type on your keyboard and it will work on the new monitor. All you need to do is just have your mouse in focus on that new computer, and then that's where the keyboard will start typing. So for me, like right now, I have my desktop plus a work laptop in front of me. So I only need one workstation. All I have to do is just, it makes life so much easier when you're typing. And finally, Windows Live Writer. If you're a blogger, you should be using this tool. It's free. It doesn't care what your blog engine is, whether it's Blogger, WordPress, LiveSpace, Subtext, DOSBlog. It just works. It has spell checking, FTP, everything. And then it's a plugin interface. So the two plugins that I love are Insert Code, which does proper formatting for code when you choose to display it. And then also there's one for Flickr, which allows you to pull down images from Flickr. So I host all my images on there on Flickr because it just makes my life easier.
Awesome.
And that's all.
Good stuff. Thanks, guys. Well, we really appreciate you taking some time to tell us your top five tools. I know that there's some that I need to go back and add to my machine because who knows when you're going to end up on a desert island. So, all right. Thanks, Clint. Thanks, Scott. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
So that was fun. Thanks to Clint and Scott for joining us there.
It's pretty amazing what the technology can do these days, that we can throw something like that together in Brian's basement.
So we'd love to do some more of those. So if anyone has ideas for topics you'd like to see us discuss with Clint or Scott or even some Niners, go ahead and throw those out. And that brings us to the last segment here, which is
Picks of the week.
So Ed, as always, it's tradition, you get your pick.
My pick of the week, and I'm first, I think, for the first time. This is actually pretty cool. It's a big honor for me. But I'm going to go with C++ because I don't think that there's enough enough sunshine that gets shown on the C++ side of the house. And a lot of people use C++. And the cool thing about it is it gives you, if you're looking for just the most bleeding edge performance you can get these days, you obviously would go to assembly. if you needed to.
Sure.
Above that, you might use, let's say, C or C++.
Right.
And if you want to really get the most out of your code, you need somebody that's going to make sure that what compiles down takes advantage of everything that has to do with your native chipset, that worries about ways to really inline code wherever possible, and to worry about the size of code versus the complexity of the code.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember back when I was learning about optimization, it was obviously we had a much lower amount of RAM to worry with, or I should say to use, to take
right.
advantage of. And we had to worry more about managing memory. So whenever we would do anything that was hand assembler, you'd really try to optimize for the size, because the worst thing is if your code pages to disk in memory. And then
sure.
you don't want that, because that obviously is a lot slower than doing an extra cycle or two. And so we would do it. But nowadays, as systems have evolved, that's the goalposts have moved as to what it takes to optimize.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft, of course, people are still working on making sure. And guys like Russell Hadley, he's out there making sure that the code that compiles and gets down to machine code is the best it can be. And there's a really great clip. It's actually, the whole thing is just fascinating. It's about maybe 50 plus minutes or
right.
so of just really hardcore optimization stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not so much, it's not like there's really tips and tricks, but it's more if you ever wondered how do you squeeze the best amount of performance
right.
out of code that you get that's almost machine code at that point.
It makes you appreciate that when you write code in Visual Studio and you hit F5,
yeah.
that there's guys like Russell
what's
that are,
really going
that are
on in there.
Making sure that it's really finely tuned. So let's take a look at the clip.
So the reader reads in, inliner. Inliner has some idea of the structure of your program. Say you call foo from mm-hmm. your function bar. It may say, you know what, foo's really simple, and it only is called in this one location. I'm going to take all the code that is inside foo, and I'm going to just put it where it's called in bar, make it just one big thing. That saves me the overhead of a call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great if you only have one. Say you call it a million times from a million different locations. You're not going to want to replicate that code a million times. So there's a size trade-off. So these are one of the things. The inliner will make decisions about what code can be inlined to other code to try and reduce call overhead. Global optimizer. This covers a lot of territory. This optimizes the computation of values. If you compute the value 33 12 times, it may say, oh, you know what, I can save the original value where you computed it once, and I know all the other ones are the same. I'm just going to save the original one and reuse it. I'm not going to recompute it,
okay.
you know, the 32 other times. It also does things like the algebraic simplification of expressions. You know, programmers, they want to write the code in a simple, straightforward way, and that's what we want to encourage them to do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to go in there and hand simplify all their algebra, all their math, if they don't need to. What we do is we essentially, you know, make the trees as big as we can. We may even glue trees together, and then we do a bunch of simplification, and then we'll break them back apart.
Mm, okay.
That's some cool stuff.
Definitely. And so on the whole, like, area of rocket science here, another guy comes to mind. So this is my pick of the week, talking about Mike Swanson. If you caught his blog post, Mike is a fellow evangelist, and he has his hands in all sorts of different stuff, photography and that's all that's coming to me right now, but there's a whole list of other
stuff. But there's a list, we assure you. Please check the site for an annotated reference.
So Mike's a pretty awesome guy. He worked on Defender, actually, you know, that game by Midway?
Okay.
He wrote the little explosion graphic, like
really?
It was a summer internship years ago.
Huh.
Mike is actually 87, so yeah, he was in his mid-40s when this came out. But Mike has the task this year of scheduling, or actually owning all the content at PDC 2008. And part of that is the challenge of scheduling this content so that you can get to the right sessions you want to go to, so that, you know, we figure out, all right, well, if a lot of people want to see this session and this session, we don't schedule them at the same time. The LA Convention Center is a pretty big place. We want to make sure that that you can easily move from one session to another. So it's a very complex problem, and it's something that can really, there's no best solution that you're going to come mm-hmm. up with. It's a heuristic approach to solving this problem. So Mike wrote a post about how he wants to use genetic algorithms, which sounds really rocket science, but he actually sat down with Charles and mm-hmm. explained genetic algorithms and how he's applying that to PDC 2008. Really interesting video. So let's take a look at Mike explaining genetic algorithms and PDC scheduling.
So we generate all these random solutions. We score fitness.
Okay.
Right? We keep track of the fitness for each of these. And then at the end of scoring them all, we do something called elitism, and that is we keep the best. So we sort all these solutions. So let's say that the optimal solution in this world, let's say, is zero. In other words, if I score a zero in my fitness function, that is a perfect schedule that hits every single constraint. Probably not going to happen, but let's say.
Okay.
Let's say our first one, though, is, 1,000, whatever that means, because we haven't talked about the specifics. The next one's, 2,000, 5,000, they're pretty ridiculously sized up there. Okay. And elitism basically says, let's take the top X. In my case, it's the top 20% of the population, mm-hmm. and these factors do influence output. But take the top 20%, kill off all the rest, right? So we're going to start a new generation or a new set of solutions. Mm-hmm. We're going to copy these over immediately because we know they're good, they're top, mm-hmm. right? They're survival of the fittest. And we're going to fill out the rest of this population with two different types of solutions. One is called mutation, and one is called crossover.
So also along those lines, I took a look at Code Project, and there's a genetic algorithms library that can help you model your own genetic algorithms and come up with solutions as well. So it seemed like a really good tie-in to talk about not only Mike's video and using genetic algorithms as applied to PDC 2008, but also to talk about this library that's out there via Mladen Junkovic over on Code Project. So that is my pick of the week. And I think
it is a great topic to cover because mm-hmm. also one of the great things that Mike does is he kind of demystifies it. Like, it's something where somebody hears genetic algorithm and they probably think, all right, I'm not a PhD in computer science.
Right.
That doesn't apply to me. But you can see from what Mike did, this is a real-world application. And
even Mike could figure it out. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't take that angle to it. But I think Mike explained it in such a way that any of us could sit down and actually use that and at least conceptually be able to make the most out of some of these opportunities that come up. Because if you can use it to organize, let's say, sessions, think about all the other scheduling tasks or the workflow tasks, the other things that you can improve the way your software works, really pretty transparently too, because mm-hmm. the functionality is the kind of thing you wouldn't notice it unless somebody called it out.
I wonder if I can use genetic algorithms to improve my Halo game. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, that'd probably be pretty good.
So that's it for another episode of This Week on Channel 9.
Chat's on, so this is my chat window. All the chats go there. So, for example, here's a chat. Let us follow that chat.
Ooh. Nice.